At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Lawyers, what's the wildest moment your own client turned on you in court? Story one. I was defending a woman in a messy child custody battle. Her ex painted her as unstable, but we had therapy records, testimony from a school counselor, even a video of her calmly dealing with her child during a meltdown. Midway through cross-examining her ex, I'm on a roll. The judge is clearly leaning our way. Then, during recess, my client comes up and whispers, "He doesn't know I switched the meds in his house. He thinks he's crazy." I froze. "What?" She said, "Well, I mean, you already made me look stable. We're good, right?" I immediately informed the judge in chambers. I had no choice. She turned on me in front of the court, yelling that I was lying, conspiring with her ex, and trying to ruin her. She lost custody, and I lost 3 nights of sleep wondering how close I came to helping a sociopath win. Story two. My client was a guy charged with assault in a road rage incident. He swore up and down that he was defending himself. We had no video, but 3 witnesses were shaky on details. The alleged victim didn't have consistent bruising to match his claims. On the stand, my client says, "I only punched him once. The rest was just stomping." I just blinked. That wasn't part of any version he'd told me. He looked at me like, "What? You said be honest." The prosecutor paused, then slowly looked over at me like, "You good?" The judge asked me if I wanted to request a recess. I wanted a time machine. He was found guilty within 15 minutes. I still don't know if he panicked or just decided mid-trial he didn't care anymore. Story three. I represented a woman in a fraud case. She allegedly embezzled about $45,000 from the nonprofit she worked for. Her defense was that she was set up by the new treasurer who suddenly found all this missing money after they'd had personal drama. We prepared for weeks. The jury seemed sympathetic. She looked like someone's sweet auntie. Then, during cross, the prosecutor asked if she ever had access to the backup fund account. She looks at me, smiles, and says, "Well, I wasn't supposed to. That wasn't a yes or no, but it was enough." Then she adds, "But I figured since I was doing the work, it was kind of fair." You could hear a collective gasp from the jury. After court, she said she didn't realize intent mattered. She thought admitting it made her look transparent. Story four. My client was on trial for aggravated battery, bar fight, broken bottle, the works. I got the charges reduced to simple battery based on lack of intent and self-defense. We're in trial. My strategy hinged on him having no prior convictions. It's going well, until he suddenly blurts, "This is nothing compared to what I did in Ohio." The room went silent. I stammered, trying to redirect, but the judge cut me off and asked the prosecutor to approach. She pulled his record again, found a sealed juvie file that mysteriously now felt very relevant. After court, he laughed and said, "Damn, forgot that was sealed." He thought it was cool to seem tough in front of the jury. We pled out that afternoon. Story five. I once represented a guy in a landlord-tenant dispute. Seemed straightforward. He claimed his former tenants trashed his property, left early, and owed him for damages. We had pictures, lease agreements, texts. On cross, the tenant's lawyer asked about a camera he allegedly had in the hallway. My client said, "Oh, not just the hallway. There were cams inside, too." He smiled like it was smart. I nearly choked. He had installed interior cameras without telling the tenants and admitted it in court. Judge stopped everything. We went into chambers. The judge referred the matter for potential criminal invasion of privacy. My client fired me the next day for not defending him enough. I got a thank you letter from the tenants 2 months later. Story 6. I represented a small business owner accused of workplace harassment. He insisted it was a vendetta from a disgruntled ex-employee. We had email chains, video footage showing no contact between them for months, and even a signed letter of resignation from the complainant. Things looked good. The judge was attentive. The jury looked bored. Then during cross, the plaintiff mentions a burner email address. The prosecutor says they traced it to a private message with threats. I object, demand proof. My client leans over and whispers, "That wasn't threats. That was just me saying she'd regret messing with me." I froze. Next day, digital forensics linked that email to his Wi-Fi, his phone, and his IP history. His defense imploded. On the record, he snapped, "You're supposed to protect me, not throw me under the bus." He said that in front of the jury. Story 7. This one still makes me sick. I was appointed to defend a teenager in a burglary case. Small-time stuff. Stole some tools and electronics. He swore he didn't go inside the house, just waited outside while someone else grabbed the goods. Our whole strategy was built around that. Then on the stand, I asked him gently, "Did you enter the house at any point?" He said, "Only when I saw the dog. I didn't want to leave it scared, so I let it out." What? That little detail meant he did go inside. The moment he said that, our plea bargain evaporated. That house was considered occupied. Burglary of an inhabited dwelling carries a much harsher sentence. He looked confused. "You told me to tell the truth, right?" "Yes, but not to change the story on the stand with a bonus confession." Story 8. I represented a man suing a major car manufacturer over a brake failure. It was a David versus Goliath case. Local news even ran a story about it. The defendant's legal team came in swinging. My guy played the sympathetic angle. Single dad, mechanic, meticulous driver. His truck ran off the road and hit a tree. Claimed the brakes gave out. Then one afternoon during trial prep, he casually says, "The meth lab in the back didn't explode, so that's good, right?" I stopped breathing. I demanded to know what he was talking about. Turns out the truck had been modified, with illegal components and a literal mini meth setup. Police never found it, but now I knew. And during trial, it came out. Opposing counsel blindsided us with surveillance footage showing strange activity from his garage days before the crash. He blamed me for the case falling apart. Story 9. My client was a social worker accused of falsifying welfare records. Serious stuff, but she had a clean record, and we had multiple co-workers backing her up. Trial day 2. Everything's going fine, until I hear her give her friend on the stand a little nod. Later, the witness backtracks on earlier testimony, changing key statements that supported our case. The judge calls a sidebar. Opposing counsel hints at witness tampering. I defend it, until a paralegal shows me an Instagram message the witness posted that morning. "Gonna help my girl win this fake-ass case, Thodecker Team Justice." I confronted my client in private. She said, "I didn't tell her to post it. Just said it'd be nice if she remembered who helped her get her job. She didn't even see the issue." Story 10. A client hired me to fight a wrongful termination suit. She claimed her employer fired her due to discrimination. On day 3, HR records started to contradict her timeline. I tried to salvage it. Then she drops a bomb in court. "I mean, I did call my boss a slur, but only after she called me lazy." I stared at her, slack-jawed. She had never mentioned this. Not once. Judge asked for clarification. She doubled down, saying, "Everyone's got biases. That's what court's for, right?" You could feel the jury shift. We lost everything. Even her own witness said afterward, "She never told me that happened." She emailed me weeks later saying she was thinking of suing me next. Story 11. I represented a man suing his HOA after they fined him thousands over what they claimed was an unapproved renovation. He insisted he had written permission from a board member and showed me a printed letter with a signature. I built our entire case around that document. Day of the trial, the HOA attorney calls that board member as a witness. She takes one look at the letter and says, "I didn't write this. That's not even how I sign my name." The room goes silent. I turn to my client and whisper, "Where did you get this letter?" He shrugs and says out loud, "I just made a version of what she should have sent. She told me verbally I was good." The judge blinked. I almost screamed. The opposing counsel didn't even have to work after that. The entire case collapsed into accusations of fraud, and my license was nearly on the line. My own client filed a bar complaint against me for not protecting him from himself. Story 12. I represented a woman in a pretty standard slip-and-fall case. She claimed she tripped in a poorly lit grocery aisle, hit her head, and suffered chronic migraines. We had medical records, a sympathetic neurologist, even grainy CCTV footage showing her fall. During direct, I asked her what her day-to-day life was like post-injury. She replied, "Well, I had to quit Pilates for a few weeks, but other than that, I'm back to driving, working, and teaching dance again."
I froze. "You're teaching?"
"Oh yeah, 3 classes a week now. Actually makes my headaches better." You could hear the jury collectively deflate. She'd never told me about that. The judge looked like he wanted to laugh. We lost, of course. And she asked me afterward if we could still sue them for emotional damages. Story 13. My client was an accountant being sued for malpractice. A business claimed he'd botched their quarterly filings, triggering an IRS audit. He swore up and down he submitted everything properly. Mid-trial, he suddenly says, "Can I take the stand and tell the whole story?" I said absolutely not. We were doing fine. But he insisted, so I prepped him for 2 days. We rehearsed carefully. When he got on the stand, I asked, "Did you complete all filings by the deadline?" He replies, "Well, define complete." I closed my eyes. The jury leaned in. Turns out he hadn't filed them at all. He thought that by ignoring the deadline and backdating submissions later, he could skip a step. His defense crumbled on the spot. He genuinely thought the court would understand creative flexibility. Story 14. I once represented a woman being sued by her ex-husband over a supposedly violated prenup. She claimed he'd coerced her into signing and that the agreement wasn't legally sound. Our case was strong until she took the stand. Under cross, his lawyer asked her if she remembered the notary present at the signing. She said, "Oh, I was the notary." There was a long silence. "You notarized your own prenup?" the attorney asked. She smiled. "It saved time." Turns out she was a licensed notary and thought it would be efficient to handle it herself. She hadn't told me that at all. The judge had to pause the trial to look up the legality of that. Spoiler, it's not legal in that context. We lost not just the prenup challenge, but the entire moral high ground. She genuinely thought she was being clever. Story 15. I represented a man charged with impersonating a federal officer. He claimed it was all a misunderstanding. He was a security contractor, and the badge he had was just for show. On cross, the prosecutor asked him why he wore a tactical vest with Federal Task Force on the back. He looked directly at the jury and said, "Because it looks badass," he smirked. I tried to intervene, but the damage was done. Then he adds, "Besides, if you act like you're official, people listen to you." He winked at the judge. We'd worked on presenting him as a confused civilian caught in a mix-up. Instead, he confessed to intentionally misleading people for personal convenience. He was convicted in under an hour. Afterward, he told me, "You should have stopped me sooner." Story 16. I was defending a guy in a civil defamation case brought by his former boss. My client had made several social media posts accusing the boss of stealing wages and verbally abusing staff. His defense was that everything he said was true. I asked him repeatedly if he had proof. He assured me, that he had screenshots, recordings, even corroborating co-workers. He provided none of that during discovery. Said he was still organizing his files. Then in court, when I pressed him again for evidence, he slid me a flash drive 5 minutes before testimony. I checked it during a recess. It was a Word doc that read, "I'm not afraid to speak the truth, and the truth defends itself." That was it. No exhibits, no screenshots, no emails. He told the judge, on record, that he didn't believe in submitting to the court's demand for evidence because God knows what really happened. We lost, obviously. He called me a coward for not matching his energy. Story 17. I once had a client in a family court case who wanted full custody of his kids. His ex had a DUI 2 years prior, and he used that as the core of his argument. He portrayed himself as the stable parent, completely against drugs or alcohol. We prepped for weeks. Clean image, solid timeline, character witnesses. On the second day of testimony, the opposing counsel brings up his Instagram. Apparently, he'd posted a picture just 3 nights earlier of himself at a party, red-eyed and holding a bottle labeled homemade edibles. He laughed on the stand and said, "It was just for the likes. I don't even get high. I just wanted to look cool." He literally said that under oath. The judge was not amused. His credibility took a nosedive and the case flipped. He now only has visitation. After court, he told me I should have warned him that judges can't take a joke. Story 18. My client was charged with wire fraud involving fake charity donations. We argued that he'd been duped into being a front man for a larger scam and had no idea where the money was actually going. I told him not to talk to the media, repeatedly. One morning before court, I open Twitter and see him trending. He posted a video in front of the courthouse saying, "Look, worst case scenario, I pay a fine and do a little time. I'll bounce back. Everyone scams these days." That video got played in court. Prosecutor used it in closing arguments. He looked right at me as the jury went into deliberations and said, "That wasn't in court though, right? So it doesn't count." He was convicted. We never spoke again. Story 19. I defended a woman accused of falsifying academic credentials to land a six-figure university job. She claimed it was a clerical error and that she had completed her PhD, but the paperwork was delayed due to an overseas university shutdown during COVID. We backed it up with embassy records, letters from the supposed university, and character references. During cross-examination, the prosecutor asked her what her dissertation title was. She blanked. Then she said, "It was something about gender theory or maybe ethics in education." That wasn't what she told me. The title she gave me previously had been a paragraph long and extremely specific. The prosecutor pulled out a fact check from the fake university's website. It had never offered PhDs. My client snapped and shouted, "Who even checks this stuff anyway? It's not like I killed someone." The courtroom fell silent. She wasn't just discredited, she was charged with a second count of perjury. Story 20. I represented a small-time musician who was suing a record label for breach of contract. He said they promised royalties that never came, and we had emails suggesting they'd underpaid him. Things were going smoothly until the label's lawyer asked, during cross, "Can you explain these emails from your address to our finance director threatening to leak unreleased material unless you got paid double?" I turned to my client, confused. He shrugged and said, "I figured the legal system moves slow. This way, I had a backup plan." It was blackmail, documented, from his real email, dated after we'd filed the lawsuit. I asked for an immediate recess and tried to salvage what I could. The label countersued and settled for pennies. My client told me, "That's on you for not warning me how thorough they'd be." Story 21. I was defending a man in a contract dispute with a startup he helped fund. He claimed he'd invested $75,000 into the business and was promised equity. No paperwork had ever materialized, but there were emails, Slack messages, and handshakes. We argued breach of oral agreement. On the second day of trial, the opposing side's lawyer asked him point blank, "Did you ever transfer the money you say you invested?" My client answered, "Well, no, but I planned to." I blinked. He then explained to the entire courtroom that he believed intent to invest was basically the same as actually doing it, and that his verbal commitment should carry weight. He genuinely thought courts operated like promises among friends. The judge looked at me like, "Are you serious?" Needless to say, we lost. Then he tried to sue me for malpractice, claiming I didn't translate the law into real-life terms. Story 22. I had a case where my client, a small contractor, was being sued for damage to a historical building during a renovation. He claimed it was an unavoidable consequence of pre-existing structural issues, and that he followed code. We had inspector's notes, before and after images, even expert testimony. During the trial, the plaintiff's lawyer showed security footage from the night before demolition began. My client was seen spray painting a wall with, "This place is a rat cage." He laughed on the stand and said, "I thought I'd leave my mark before it all came down." It destroyed our argument that he treated the site with care. He even added, "Honestly, they should have paid me for taking that dump down." The jury didn't even need to deliberate. They returned the verdict in 14 minutes. Story 23. I represented a woman in a wage discrimination lawsuit against a mid-sized tech company. Her argument was compelling. Same job title, same workload, significantly lower pay than her male peers. The company's lawyers tried to trip her up in deposition, but she held her ground. Then, mid-trial, she casually revealed under oath that she'd hacked into the company's internal payroll software to verify her suspicions. She even smiled about it, saying, "They weren't going to tell me the truth, so I found it myself. She had never told me this." It completely nuked her credibility and opened her up to counterclaims for unauthorized access to confidential systems. She lost the case and got reported to federal authorities. When I confronted her afterwards, she said, "You're not mad, are you? I mean, it was empowering." Story 24. My client was a landlord being sued for wrongful eviction. He insisted that the tenant had been months behind on rent, that he followed the notice process by the book, and that she had vacated willingly. His timeline and documents held up until the tenant submitted security cam footage showing him changing the locks with her belongings still inside. He tried to spin it by saying she had abandoned the unit. But the real kicker? He then turned to the judge and said, "Besides, she was weird. She collected clown dolls." The judge slowly looked at me. I couldn't even object. That had nothing to do with anything. He just couldn't help himself. We lost. He told me later, "Maybe next time we go with a jury, they'd have laughed." Story 25. I represented a guy in a wrongful arrest case. He was suing the city, claiming excessive force and unlawful detainment. He had some real bruises, and body cam footage showed cops being aggressive. We had a shot. Then, during trial, the defense attorney played audio from a voicemail my client had left for his ex. It said, "I'll make those pigs pay. I'll say whatever I have to. City owes me." I wasn't even aware the voicemail existed. I turned to my client. He just nodded and whispered, "Don't worry, that's not even the worst thing I said that night." It was. Jury tossed the claim, and the judge warned him about possible perjury charges. Later, he told me, "I thought juries loved anti-police stuff. That's on them." Story 26. I represented a local pastor who was being sued for misuse of church funds. He swore the money went toward community outreach, and we had receipts for food drives, youth events, and donations to shelters. Things were holding up until he insisted on showing the jury a personal slideshow of his mission work. I advised against it, but he told the court he had the right. Slide 1, a soup kitchen. Slide 2, a youth concert. Slide 3, him in a Gucci jacket on a jet ski in the Bahamas, captioned, "God blesses his soldiers." The room went dead silent. I stared straight ahead like I didn't exist. He beamed and said, "That trip was for spiritual recharge." The judge muttered, "And who paid for it?" He replied, "Well, technically, God did, through the congregation." We lost, and I walked out of court before the closing statement. Story 27. I was representing a woman in a harassment case against a former colleague. Her story was solid. Inappropriate texts, late-night calls, suggestive jokes at work. We had screen recordings, coworker testimony. She seemed composed and credible. But then on redirect, I asked her why she hadn't blocked him sooner. She said, "Because I was still hoping he'd choose me over his wife." The courtroom collectively stiffened. I tried to clarify, but she doubled down. I wasn't mad about the flirting. I was mad that he ghosted me. So, yeah, I wanted to ruin him a little. The opposing lawyer looked like they won the lottery. That one sentence killed her credibility. The judge even commented on the vengeful motive. I still have nightmares about that cross-examination. Story 28. My client was a mid-level executive in a whistleblower suit against a pharmaceutical company. He claimed he'd been demoted for exposing internal misconduct. We had documentation of shady testing protocols and emails suggesting retaliation. It was the kind of case that could have made headlines. Then he took the stand and said, "I mean, yeah, I made some of those numbers up, but just to get attention." My brain stopped working for a full 5 seconds. The prosecutor jumped on it. "You falsified information in the report you submitted to federal regulators?" He smiled. "Only a little, but it worked, right?" We went from building a career-defining case to potentially implicating him in fraud. He emailed me later and said, "Sorry I couldn't resist the mic drop." Story 29. I defended a college athlete charged with assaulting a campus security officer. His version? He'd been shoved first, reacted instinctively, and only tried to slap the radio away. Campus footage wasn't perfect, but we had character witnesses and a decent shot at probation. Then the prosecution called a surprise witness, his roommate. On the stand, the roommate said, "Oh yeah, he told me he'd knock that rent-a-cop into next week. We were laughing about it during fortnight." I turned to my client, horrified. He whispered, "I didn't think Josh would take it literally." The courtroom audibly groaned. That one testimony sent us from negotiating a plea to facing real jail time. Story 30. My client was a wedding planner being sued by a bride for allegedly ruining her ceremony. Wrong flowers, missing photographer, late catering. We had invoices, contracts, even photos showing setup underway. During trial, I asked my client why she hadn't called the bride to warn her about the late caterer. She smiled and said, "Because she was being a bridezilla, and I wanted her to sweat a little. I blinked so hard it hurt." She went on, "I didn't sabotage the wedding. I just let karma run its course." The judge's eyebrows reached orbit. We had a legitimate case until she essentially confessed to passive-aggressively tanking the most important day of someone's life. After the
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
A loss, she texted me. At least I got the last word. Story 31. I represented a woman in a copyright infringement case. She claimed a former colleague stole her design for a logo now used by a successful startup. The images were similar, and we had timestamps, drafts, and metadata on our side. Trial was going fine until cross-examination, when the opposing lawyer asked, "Is this your DeviantArt page from 2011? He pulled it up, and sure enough, her logo was posted under a completely different username back then. She smiled and said, "Oh yeah, I bought it online years ago and just changed the color." My soul left my body. I leaned in and whispered, "You didn't create it?" She replied, "No, but I paid for it. That makes it mine, right?" "Wrong, so wrong." The judge stopped the trial. She was hit with legal fees and potential fraud charges. She later left me a one-star Yelp review. Story 32. My client was a small-town mayor facing ethics violations. She allegedly used city funds to renovate her private home. She insisted it was a clerical error and that the receipts had been misfiled. We combed through stacks of invoices to show plausible confusion. The press was watching. Local government had eyes on us. Then on the stand, she said, "Honestly, I just figured no one would notice. It's not like I bought a yacht." My jaw clenched. Opposing counsel leaned in and asked, "So you knowingly used the budget for personal purposes?" She replied, "Well, yeah, but only like a little," she confessed, out loud, on the record. When I confronted her after court, she said, "You're not mad, right? I was just trying to be relatable." I still hear the gavel in my nightmares. Story 33. I was defending a high school teacher in a wrongful termination suit. She was fired for allegedly manipulating test scores. She denied it, said it was an error in the grading software. We even brought in a tech expert to validate her claim. Then, during cross, opposing counsel casually asked, "And you never accessed the student portal manually?" She replied, "Only once to balance things out for a few kids who really tried." My eyes snapped to hers. "What does balance things out mean?" the judge asked. "I just gave them all hundreds," she said. It felt good, that was it. Months of prep, ruined. She admitted to grade inflation, in court. She told me afterward, "It wasn't dishonest, it was encouragement." The school district settled. She got nothing. Story 34. I represented a guy in a defamation suit. He claimed an ex-friend ruined his business reputation by spreading lies online. He said he'd lost clients, investors, credibility. The case was strong until the defense introduced his own Reddit history. One comment read, "Tanking his dumb company was easy. I made two sock puppet accounts and let them loose. I turned to my client. He was pale." The judge asked, "Did you write this?" He said, "I mean, it was satire." I tried to object, but the judge cut me off. He said, "Counsel, control your witness." The jury was visibly done. He confessed to the online campaign during recess, thinking it wasn't technically lying. I walked out of court and turned off my phone. Story 35. My client was a tech influencer being sued for breach of a non-disclosure agreement. He had signed an NDA during beta testing of a gadget, then accidentally leaked specs in a live stream. He claimed it was all improvised and off script. Then, during trial, opposing counsel pulled up a private Discord server message. He had written, "I'm leaking it tomorrow, going to blow up on YouTube, worth the lawsuit." He grinned and said in court, "I mean, he's not wrong." I felt my spine contract. He'd planned the whole thing. I'd spent weeks preparing a defense around accidental disclosure. Now I was defending a guy who thought intentional breach was a marketing strategy. He called me the next week asking if I'd help negotiate a book deal. Story 36. I was representing a woman in a housing discrimination lawsuit. She claimed a landlord refused to rent to her based on race and marital status. Her application had been denied despite perfect credit and income. We had strong circumstantial evidence, texts, timing, witness statements. I really thought we could make an example of the landlord. Then the landlord's lawyer introduced audio from a voicemail my client left the building manager. The same night her application was rejected, she said, "I'll sue your crusty ass and tell everyone you called me a slur. Try explaining that to the news." She smiled on the stand and said, "Well, I had to scare him somehow. I looked down at my notes and realized none of them mattered anymore." The jury gave her nothing. She told me, "You didn't push hard enough. I gave you the ammo. I wanted to disappear." Story 37. My client was a father fighting for full custody. His ex had some past issues, DUI, mental health struggles, but was working on herself. He presented as the stable, responsible one. During trial, I asked him if he believed co-parenting was possible. He replied, "Honestly, I only did this to break her. She took my dog, so I'm taking the kid." Silence. The judge leaned forward. "Excuse me?" He laughed and said, "I mean, not literally, but yeah, I don't trust her, and this'll teach her a lesson." It was over. The judge ruled for joint custody with extra therapy and court monitoring. My client fired me the next day. He left a voicemail saying, "You should have told me not to be honest about revenge." Story 38. I represented a boutique owner being sued for racial profiling after a customer was wrongly accused of shoplifting. She told me the whole thing was a misunderstanding. She thought an alarm had gone off, said she apologized immediately and refunded the customer. Everything changed when security footage was played in court. The customer was simply browsing. My client followed her around and said, clear as day, "I know your type. Just waiting to slip something in that big purse." The courtroom was ice. She turned to me and whispered, "Well, I wasn't wrong. Doesn't mean I profiled." I stared at her. She had lied, under oath. She was fined, countersued, and is now banned from owning a retail space in that county. Story 39. I was defending a woman in a high-profile libel case. She'd posted a viral thread accusing a local doctor of malpractice, and he sued. Her defense was that she'd heard it from multiple sources. We asked her not to speak to press. She agreed. Then, halfway through the trial, she posted a TikTok from the courtroom bathroom saying, "Win or lose, I exposed him. My job's done." It had over 400,000 views by the end of the day. Opposing counsel played it in court. She said, "That was just a vibe check. I wanted the floor to open and swallow me whole." We lost. She emailed me afterward with a photo of herself flipping off the courthouse and the caption, "Free speech, baby." Story 40. My client was a business coach suing a former mentee who had stolen her paid program. The case hinged on proving original authorship of her workbooks and materials. I asked her for proof, drafts, emails, timestamps. She gave me a thumb drive labeled confidential. We submitted it into evidence. Opposing counsel opened it and showed the court an entire folder of downloaded templates from Canva and Etsy. She hadn't created anything. She shrugged in court and said, "No one really creates from scratch anymore." Judge dismissed the case instantly and sanctioned her for wasting time. She later told me, "Well, at least now my name's out there." I told her, "Yes, in the worst way possible." Story 41. My client was a 19-year-old suing a local auto shop for damages to his modified street racer. He claimed they'd botched a custom job and wrecked the engine. We had photos, receipts, even a message from the mechanic admitting something wasn't done right, but during trial, opposing counsel pulled up the shop's security footage. It showed my client screaming at the mechanics the day of pickup, revving his car, then immediately racing off and blowing the engine 5 blocks away. When I confronted him during recess, he said, "Yeah, but that's because they already messed it up. I was just testing it." Then, during his own testimony, he said, "Honestly, I floored it because I wanted to make a scene. I figured it'd make them panic and settle. We had no case left." He told me afterward, "At least I got a few sick drifts before it blew." Story 42. I represented a wedding photographer being sued for missing the bride and groom's first kiss and several key shots. Her defense was technical malfunction, shutter issues, faulty card. During cross-examination, the bride's attorney asked why there were 117 pictures of the cake and 0 of the father-daughter dance. My client smirked and said, "The cake was gorgeous. I stand by that decision." I buried my face in my binder. She then added, "The father looked like he was going to cry, and not in a good way." She had absolutely no sense of how this sounded. We lost. Big. She later emailed me saying she'd use the trial as content for her YouTube channel. Photographer on trial, Bridezillas and Betrayals. Story 43. I was defending a local chef who had been accused of food tampering. The plaintiff claimed he'd been deliberately served something he was allergic to, despite informing the restaurant. My client swore he never saw the allergy note, said it was a kitchen miscommunication. Then during trial, opposing counsel presented a video from the chef's private Instagram story, posted the night of the incident. In it, he held up the plaintiff's order and said, "When Karens want substitutions, we give them surprises instead." My jaw hit the floor. The plaintiff had screen recorded it. My client tried to claim it was a joke. The jury didn't laugh. He ended up with fines, a civil judgment, and got dropped from his TV spot. Story 44. I represented a woman who ran a dog rescue. She was being sued for breach of contract after rehoming a foster dog that the original family claimed was still theirs. She said they'd abandoned it. The dog had been left at a park and she'd been the one to save it. Trial was going decently until the opposing attorney showed a text from her phone to a friend. "I finally got rid of the mutt. Those people were too annoying to deal with." I looked at her in horror. She shrugged and said, "It's just how I talk when I'm mad." The judge looked like he wanted to scold her like a child. We settled for pennies. She was banned from fostering animals for 5 years. She told me, "It's fine. I'm switching to cats. They don't come with lawyers." Story 45. I was defending a real estate agent in a licensing board hearing. He was accused of steering buyers toward homes owned by relatives, inflating commissions, and hiding disclosures. He told me everything was by the book. Every paper signed, every rule followed. Then on the stand, he casually said, "Sometimes clients don't need to know every mold issue. That just scares them away." I went cold. "Are you saying you knowingly withheld required disclosures?" He smiled. "No, I just didn't emphasize them. That's sales." The board took about 25 minutes to revoke his license. He turned to me after the hearing and said, "You should have told me the truth would sound so bad." Story 46. I was defending a young man in a hit-and-run case. He swore he panicked after clipping another vehicle and that he intended to turn himself in but ran out of time. We had a shot at negotiating it down to reckless driving. In court, I carefully prepped his statement. It was sincere, apologetic, remorseful. But when the prosecutor asked him, "Why didn't you stop immediately?" he replied, "Because I had weed in the car. I wasn't going down for that." Pause. She followed up, "And did you?" He laughed. "Oh yeah, a lot." We hadn't discussed any of that. No mention of drugs, no disclosure during intake. I was floored. He turned to me afterward and said, "You said to be honest. You didn't say only partially honest." Story 47. My client was an aspiring actor suing a casting agency for discrimination. He claimed he was passed over repeatedly due to his disability and that they blacklisted him from future auditions. He gave me a list of 10 roles he'd auditioned for and said he was perfect for everyone. During discovery, opposing counsel requested his public social media, and one of his posts was a TikTok where he impersonated the casting director, mocking them with a fake lisp and exaggerated limp. In court, they played it for the jury. He said, smiling, "That was satire. Satire is protected." The judge asked him if he thought mocking the person he was accusing of discrimination helped his case. He responded, "It got likes. That's something." We settled. It wasn't pretty. Story 48. I represented a high school principal accused of retaliating against a teacher who reported a bullying incident. My client swore he'd followed district policy and had never held a grudge. Then the teacher's lawyer submitted a printed copy of a WhatsApp group chat, admins only, where my client had written, "Guess snitches don't get promotions." He laughed on the stand and said, "Come on, that's just locker room talk. We joke." I whispered, "You're not in a locker room. You're under oath." He followed it up by saying, "I mean, if I had wanted her gone, I could have made it happen." The jury didn't need to deliberate long. The district fired him within 72 hours of the verdict. Story 49. My client was suing his HOA for harassment. He said the board president had targeted him for violations no one else was penalized for, garden decor, parking, etc. We had several affidavits supporting his claims. Then during cross, the opposing lawyer brought up an anonymous email sent to the HOA 2 weeks prior. It contained threats like, "Hope your dog doesn't disappear next," and "Enjoy the lawsuit," which the IP traced back to my client's work laptop. He leaned toward the mic and said, "Okay, yeah, I wrote that, but it wasn't a threat. It was more like poetic justice." The judge looked stunned. He said it so casually, like we were debating a restaurant bill. Story 50. I represented a man in a personal injury claim. He said he'd slipped on a supermarket floor, hurt his back, and couldn't work. Medical records showed chronic pain, and the store's cameras did catch the fall. It was going well, until the defense attorney showed a video of him deadlifting at a gym 2 days later. Full set. No grimace. Perfect form. My client said, "Yeah, but that was lightweight. Barely counts." He then added, "Besides, the pain comes and goes. You can't see pain." Sure. But the jury sure saw a guy repping 225 pounds like an Olympian. I didn't even bother with closing arguments. He asked afterward if we could try again with a different judge. Story 51. I represented a woman who was suing her former therapist for professional negligence. She claimed the therapist ignored red flags during her treatment, misdiagnosed her, and caused severe emotional damage. We had journal entries, billing records, and a former colleague of the therapist willing to testify that corners were cut. Then, during direct examination, I asked my client how she first came to see this therapist. She smiled and said, "Well, I found her on Craigslist. She offered 50% off if you paid in crypto." The courtroom stiffened. Even the judge tilted their head. She added, "She wasn't licensed, but I didn't care. Therapy's therapy, right?" My entire argument, built around professional standards, vaporized. When we lost, she said, "That's on you for not asking the right questions earlier." Story 52. My client was a celebrity dog trainer, think viral Instagram type, suing a media company for defamation. They'd run a segment implying he abused animals behind the scenes. He swore it was fake, said his whole brand was built on trust. Everything unraveled when the defense played a blooper reel from one of his live streams that had accidentally been archived. It featured him shirtless yelling, "You stupid mutt, sit down or I'll duct tape you to the damn mat." He laughed from the witness stand and said, "Okay, that was a joke, and everyone yells once in a while. That dog is still my best friend." There were audible gasps in the gallery. He looked at me afterward and asked, "You think this'll tank my merch sales?" Story 53. I was defending a woman in a workplace retaliation suit. She'd been fired from a hospital and claimed it was because she exposed health violations. She said the administration wanted to silence her. Things were going well. The administrator looked evasive on the stand. Then, during her own testimony, she said, "Of course I made those fake photos. The real violations weren't dramatic enough." The silence in the room was painful. I froze. "Wait, you edited the pictures?" She replied, "It was just some mold overlays to get people to take it seriously." She thought it helped the case. We had to immediately change our defense strategy to damage control. The jury didn't buy a word of it after that. Story 54. My client was a senior in college suing his university for academic sabotage. He said a professor intentionally failed him to prevent him from graduating on time, claimed it was personal. We had emails that looked suspicious and even a text exchange suggesting bias. But when asked about his own academic conduct under oath, he casually said, "Well, yeah, I submitted someone else's paper, but only because I already knew the material." The room tilted. The judge asked, "Are you saying you plagiarized?" He nodded. "Not really plagiarized. I delegated, like CEOs do." Even the court reporter raised an eyebrow. His entire credibility imploded in 30 seconds. He asked if he could pivot the lawsuit into a free speech thing. Story 55. I defended a man accused of stalking his ex-girlfriend. He swore he just ran into her a lot, and the restraining order was an overreaction. The case was tight. We had GPS data showing he lived near her gym, multiple friends backing his character, and even footage showing she'd waved at him once. But during cross, the prosecutor showed screenshots of a Reddit AMA he hosted under a throwaway. One question read, "How do you keep tabs on your ex without her knowing?" He responded, "I use a spare tile in her purse. She still hasn't noticed. LOL, my heart hit the floor." He looked over at me like, "What? That's anonymous." "No, sir. Nothing's anonymous when you brag in public about felonies. We lost hard." He told me later, "Reddit karma isn't real karma, right?" Story 56. I was defending a young woman in a small town embezzlement case. She was the treasurer of a local youth soccer league and had been accused of pocketing fees from parents. Her story was that the bank had made errors and she was just disorganized, not dishonest. We were making progress. A CPA testified that the ledger entries were confusing and possibly misdated. I was optimistic. Then the prosecutor handed her a receipt found in her trash, $2,300 at a designer boutique the day after the missing funds were withdrawn. She smiled at the jury and said, "Well, yeah, I needed a little stress relief. Ever tried managing 30 angry soccer moms?" She said that out loud with confidence. It took less than an hour to reach a guilty verdict. She asked me if the league could still use her as a volunteer, just not with money this time. Story 57. My client was an engineer suing a tech firm for wrongful termination. He claimed he was let go for refusing to falsify data on a safety inspection. We had emails suggesting pressure from his supervisor and a solid whistleblower angle. But during testimony, he let something slip. They asked me to sign off on a bridge support design I hadn't even reviewed. I refused. But then I signed it later anyway. Just didn't want to lose the bonus. I froze. The judge asked him to clarify. He said, "Well, I didn't want to be difficult. I was going to check it eventually." The whole courtroom shifted. The moral high ground we'd built was gone in seconds. We settled for a fraction of what we originally sought. He told me, "At least I got the bridge thing off my chest." Story 58. I defended a middle-aged man in a medical malpractice case. He was suing a clinic for giving him the wrong dosage of medication, claiming it led to nerve damage and psychological stress. The records supported some of it. We were gaining traction. Then came the therapist's testimony. She calmly stated, "Mr. Orjuai expressed that he intended to exaggerate his symptoms during litigation because, quote, that's how the system works." He jumped up from his seat and yelled, "That was a safe space!" The judge banged the gavel so hard I flinched. He wouldn't sit down until the bailiff stepped forward. The case was dismissed with prejudice. He told me afterward, "Honestly, she had no right betraying patient confidentiality like that, even if I did say it." Story 59. I represented a guy being sued by a wedding venue for breaching his contract. He canceled the event 1 week before the date, claiming a family emergency. In court, the venue demanded the cancellation fee. My client claimed the emergency was his fiance being hospitalized. It looked bad for them trying to charge under those conditions. Then they showed Instagram posts from the groom on the day of the supposed emergency. Photos of him in Vegas with a different woman. He leaned over to me and whispered, "Don't worry, my fiance doesn't know about that either." I just stared. We didn't just lose. The opposing side filed a secondary defamation claim based on his original statements. He still tried to Venmo me $100 with the note "for the drama." Story 60. My client was a former bank manager on trial for alleged fraud. He claimed a fellow employee created fake accounts under his login. We had a strong cyber forensics angle, arguing someone else used his terminal. But the prosecution showed a video he recorded himself on Snapchat, inside the vault, lip-syncing to a song with the lyrics, "Run the game, cook the books, stack the bread." He'd captioned it, "Banker life. Don't audit me. He thought it was private. When I turned to him, he actually laughed and said, "Okay, maybe that one's a little cringe." The jury's faces were stone. We pled out the next morning. Story 61, I represented a middle-aged woman suing her former employer, a private school, for religious discrimination. She claimed they fired her for refusing to lead students in prayer that went against her beliefs. We had a compelling timeline, witness testimony, and emails with vague pressure from the administration. Then during cross, the defense asked if she'd ever talked about her faith to the students. She said, "Well, yeah, I told them the apocalypse is coming soon and that most of their parents are probably damned." There was a pause. The jury collectively raised eyebrows. The defense attorney leaned in. "Did the school ask you to stop?" She replied, "Sure. But I thought it was a test from God. I knew we were done." Later, she told me, maybe it was a test, and we both failed. Story 62. My client was an art gallery owner accused of insurance fraud. He claimed a pipe burst and damaged multiple high-value pieces, and the insurance company refused to pay out. We submitted photos of the flooded gallery, appraisals, and even weather reports showing the storm. Then the insurance company played a security video from a week earlier, showing him moving all the damaged art into storage and replacing them with fakes. On the stand, he grinned and said, "Look, I wasn't going to risk my real collection getting wet. I figured if it looked legit, the payout would still make sense." I stared at him like I'd never met him before. He said, "Don't you think that was clever?" The jury did not.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.